Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Yarn up strong, you mob, too deadly. All right, now First Peoples Art of Australia coming to the National Gallery following an international tour. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Tina Boom, curator of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art. On the line, Tina, good morning, sister. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Good morning to everybody.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, sis, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, look, I'm from Darwin originally, okay. So I've been down in Canberra for a while now, but I'm Larrakia Waterman and Gurradjuri from NT and WA.
Yes.
So, yeah, long way from home.
Long way from home. And where are you based at the moment, sister?
I'm based in Canberra, which is very, very cold at the moment. So very jealous of the warm mob up there.
Yeah, it's just I'm sitting up here in shorts, football shorts and singlet. But anyway, good to be yarning with you. And look, thank you for coming to the program. We're talking First Peoples of Art of Australia coming to National Gallery following international tour. So, pardon the pun, but paint the picture, please, regarding this this fantastic opportunity for First Nation art.
Yes. Now, look, it's called Ever Present, First Peoples Art of Australia, and the premise behind the exhibition is that it talks about our ever-present presence here in this country. So
yes.
As far as we're concerned, as everybody knows, we always have been and always will be here.
Yes.
And so we have an opportunity to showcase that to audiences around Australia now when it comes to the National Gallery in September this year. But we had... At the National Gallery of Australia, have the largest collection of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art in the world.
Yes.
And so we had an opportunity to look into our collections and to the collections of Wesfarmers Arts, who is our national arts partner, and to travel our collections internationally. So we started at the Art Gallery of Western Australia in 2021. Due to COVID, we had to start in Australia, but then, you know, get going across the seas to Southeast Asia to National Gallery of Singapore, and it was wonderful and important to be able to tell the story over there because
it was well received, was it, Tina?
Hey, what's that?
It was well received over Asia,
absolutely.
Yes.
Because we've got that Southeast Asia connection that we have had for centuries with the Macassan people,
exactly.
You know, it was really good to remind people of that connection that. You know, particularly Aboriginal people have had overseas.
Yeah, fantastic. And so here we are, bringing it back to the National Gallery of Australia.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, it's important to bring it back to this country and showcase our works again to the nation and remind everybody that, you know, we always have been and always will be here, and particularly along the east coast of Australia.
Yeah, fantastic. The exhibition, when will it start and how long does it go for?
It starts in September this year,
okay.
And it'll be on for several years.
Beautiful.
We've got an opportunity to just let it rest at home for a bit.
Cool.
So
cool.
There's plenty of time for people to come to Canberra and to come and have a look.
Could you mention some of the artists we're talking here?
Oh, gosh, we've got some fantastic, certainly, Finals Queensland artists. A lot of Torres Strait artists. We've got Alec Tapodi. We've got Janet Fieldhouse, who's in Cairns. We've got really major artists like, of course, Albert Namatjira and Emily Kamanware, as well as, you know, artists from across the country.
Yes.
It's important to have that representation and to show that diversity, strength and excellence to audiences they come across the exhibition.
And look, when you talk about art, Tina, we talk about a fantastic vehicle that talks about our culture. We are storytellers and truth-telling. It's a powerful vehicle, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, an artist is so deadly. They're just doing it in glass, in film, in metal, you know,
ghost nets.
All types of media. You know, we've really got to show that you know, diversity.
Exactly. Fantastic. All right, beautiful. Good yarning with you. Thank you so very much, my sister. You stay warm. And big shout out to National Gallery of Australia. And look, having ever present First Peoples Art of Australia coming to the National Gallery. Fantastic. After a very successful international tour and back on country. But look, thank you, my sister. You take care. Please keep in touch and we'll yarn soon.
Thank you.
Bye bye, Tina. Deadly Yarn, Tina Boom, her name is, curator of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art. Ever Present is the exhibition, and First Peoples Art of Australia coming to National Gallery following an international tour, very successful over in Asia, and it'll be placed at the exhibition, National Gallery of Australia, in September, there for a couple of years. So do check it out, your mob. Stay tuned to your daily program, National Talk Black. Trinity Trev, Murray from Curry, your host. National Talk Black, one-hour program live here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on New Ginger Country. BBM Bumper Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yarn up strong, your mob. Too deadly. that's Sweet Yuri, Black Caribbeans. Very good morning, Yoruba. Hope you're well, you deadly mob. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yana Strong. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yana's yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns in your Dindji country. BBM, Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. And big shout out to the NERS team. Thank you. All right, some deadly news, you mob. Come join us. This is from the Wootropolin Health Service. Come join us for an enlightening dialogue with Uncle Mick Gooder, a proud Gungaloo man and esteemed thought leader. Uncle Mick will delve into one of the most critical conversations of our generation, life following the Indigenous Voice to Parliament referendum. The event will be held on the 14th of May, that's tomorrow, Tuesday, at 5 p.m. at Nitragani Cultural Training Centre, 1618 McCormack Street, Moorabool. So for more information, visit the website, that's at Wootropolin, or call 4080 1000, number again 4080 1000. And remember, together we keep our generations growing strong. So there it is. Have a yarn with Uncle Mick Gooder, who will be performing a critical conversation of our generation life following the Indigenous Voice to Parliament referendum. Your daily program, National Talk Black, Yarn Up Strong, and a big shout out to First Nation radio stations across this beautiful Big Island, a Deadly Black Network, and thank you, Deadly Mob. Keep doing what you're doing and making our yarn strong and a platform for our mob to play their music, have their yarns, and deliver dialogue to Deadly. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. You can also text a brother, 0457140550. And don't forget our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. Thinking about your body next to mine, butterflies gonna keep on flying. You're too messed up to remember. Hey, you mob, it's Jessica Malvoy, and you're tuned into National Talk Black, Trevor Tim, Trendy Turb, Murray from the Curry via BBM 98.7 FM, also NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service.
Yeah.
Yeah, deadly track there, Nagegi Gigi. That's Raz Alpha here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yana Strong, deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, Yana, yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. A one-hour program come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumbabrib Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Yana Strong, your mob. Let's look at news, update news, conversation here. Enough is enough. Indigenous women are most affected by domestic violence but have struggled to be heard. It's time we listen. As the country reels from women being killed due to violence, government has responded by calling urgent meetings and roundtables to address this national crisis. This must properly include Indigenous women who experience shocking levels of family and domestic violence and sexual assault. It must be recognised women are not a, a homogeneous collective group. The issues experienced by non-Indigenous women are not always the same as those experienced by Indigenous women. As such, it is imperative the voices of Indigenous survivors, researchers and advocates in addressing violence are fully heard and respected in the current debate. According to the recent research led by Kylie Cripps, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander women are 32 times more likely to be hospitalised for injury associated with violence than non-Indigenous women. They are 8 times more likely to be a victim of a homicide. This figure is higher in some areas, such as Western Australia, which recorded Aboriginal mothers as 17.5 times more likely to be victim of a homicide. Recently, the Domestic, Family and Sexual Violence Commission convened an emergency roundtable. However, we are still concerned the outcomes of the roundtable do not respond to the seriousness and ongoing structural systematic barriers Indigenous women face. They are also concerned a significant investment recently announced in Western Australia will not support Indigenous women. They're based largely on an expansion of existing services. We're talking police, child protection and corrections, and non-Indigenous service responses. These decisions were made contrary to the state's own Aboriginal family violence policy and in the absence of research or evidence base. Potentially harmful reforms, Indigenous women's sustained advocacy, as well as coronial inquest and the Senate inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women, have all shone a light on how Indigenous women and children experience violence at alarming rates, even after formal inquiries and royal commissions over the past two decades. However, as they identified in the Independent Commission inquiry into the Queensland Police Service's responses to domestic and family violence reforms, are often reactive and short-lived. Key recommendations have been ignored while government have made services mainstream. White feminists have pursued a law and order agenda that has been proven not only to be ineffectual, but potentially even harmful to Indigenous women. For example, cohesive control laws risk identifying Indigenous women as the perpetrator of violence for not presenting as ideal victims. As Aboriginal women with lived experiences of violence, we continue to point out the urgency of addressing the adherent rates of violence through the inclusion of our voices at national forums. For years, Indigenous researchers, survivors, advocates and allies have called for action. This advocacy and experience is often overlooked. failures of policy. Governments promised to address this issue. Emergency services promised to do better. Yet in coronial inquests, inquiries and specialised investigations, we continue to see the service with the mandate to protect the community failing Indigenous women. Indigenous women are reluctant to call the police for many reasons, including ongoing racism and prejudice. Indigenous women know police may not take their reporting of violence seriously. This common knowledge in the Indigenous community, calls are often downgraded and urgency or not responded to at all. Even after a victim has repeatedly called 000 for support, in many cases Aboriginal women are wrongly identified as perpetrators. Situations have also resulted in their being murdered. The Northern Territory Coroner is currently examining the role systematic racism played in the murders of 4 Aboriginal women. The Queensland Commission of Inquiry also found racism, misogyny and sexism contributed to the negative experiences of victim survivors. Cripps further found in her study, coroners have previously identified systematic racism as being significant in the deaths of Indigenous women. And while Aboriginal women are in elevated risk of violence and homicide, culturally safe family and domestic violence services are critically underfunded or non-existent. This is neglectful. The National Family Violence Prevention and Legal Service has funded tied to federal government cycles and is unable to meet demand. It's currently awaiting the government's response to review into the National Legal Assistance Program. This was finalised in March and called for an increase in recruiting recurrent funding to enable their services to provide crucial support to Indigenous women and children nationally. One size doesn't fit all. Indigenous women have long argued for systematic reforms that address the underlying drivers of violence, support victims as survivors, ensure justice and demand accountability for offenders. This means not every support service can be for all women. They need to be tailored to meet the specific needs of Indigenous women. The presumption that one size fits all omits the unique factors in different communities across the nation. For example, some regional and remote communities face significant difficulties in accessing telecommunication services. At the same time, the connectedness of cities doesn't automatically make support easily accessible. The lives of Indigenous women are further at risk with delays due to distance and access to funds to escape the unsafe situation. This was demonstrated through evidence supplied to the Queensland Commissioner of Inquiry. It found a high likelihood of death in some remote areas. Centralised all centres can be thousands of kilometres away, delaying access to help. Research jointly led by Marlene Longbottom found accessible services need to ensure Indigenous women are not re-traumatised as they share their stories. We should also remember the first responders in these situations are unlikely families. As a result of helping women fleeing a violent situation, families also become targets for perpetrators and their networks. So a lot of work to be done in this space, and so we should, enough is enough, is the statement heading this conversation. Indigenous women are most affected by domestic violence, but have struggled to be heard. It's time we listen. So look, take that on board. It's so very important. That in itself is a pandemic. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, with Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry, here at BBM, Bumblebrit Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the nation thanks to NERS, Nationalist Radio Service. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
My story. on your mob. It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BB and Bumba Brip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Yarn up strong, you mob. Big shout out to NERS, National Radio Service, a good team, and hope you all well. And a big shout out to First Nation Radio Stations across this beautiful country of ours, a Daily Black Network. All right, now, a Daily book. I spoke to the author, Deadly Sister, Samantha Faulkner, edited by her, and the title of the book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. So we had a Deadly yarn. It was a couple of weeks ago. Well, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Deadly Sister, Pumley, Lenora Thacker, established writer and also a published writer and author. And she's a storyteller, and she was one of the storytellers in the book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. And a very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Hi, Bala Trev. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. And before we start, sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, well, dad's side, we're from Erib, Eastern Torres Strait, and mum's side, Western Torres Strait, Mobiag and Badu Island.
Yeah, beautiful. And so we have connection, my sister, via Erib, Dunley Island. So we are Pumley, and that means I can borrow money for you, sister. Does that mean? Yeah. The other way around.
Oh, true God.
True God. Thank you, my sister. Listen, you're one of the storytellers, established writer yourself, but you're one of the storytellers in Samantha Faulkner's book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. Tell us first the connection with Samantha. How did you come about? Do you guys know each other? Do you know family? Tell us your connection there, please.
Yeah, so we didn't know each other personally. I knew of her through sort of like literary circles.
And a big shout out to Sister Samantha.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Samantha. and I also sort of know Samantha's family. I know members from her family, from, you know, Ate, Ali Drummond mob.
Yes, all the Drummond
mob.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no family members. And she knew a lot of my family members as well. And then finally we got to meet up at one of these writers' events and, established that connection there. And, things sort of went from there.
Because in her book and storytellers, Eddie Marbo is mentioned, of course, Thomas Mayo, Aaron Faaso, Jimmy Barney, Ali Gackney, Gillian Boyd Bowie, I got a connection there as well, and as well as yourself with more storytellers and mentors, traditional owners, doctors and teachers from Torres Strait, and they share their joy and culture, good eating lessons, learned and love family and language and country all in this one book. So tell us your engagement in regarding the book and you knew of her, as you just explained. How did the conversation come about her writing a book, and can she get a story from you? Is that how it came about?
Yeah. Well, look. First of all, I have to say I'm so humbled to be included with so many of these, you know, fabulous Torres Strait Islander mob. You know, even though they're sort of like, you know, like a lot of them can be regarded as family and have come to be regarded as family, but to be, you know, counted amongst other storytellers like, you know, our late greats, Uncle Koiki Mabo, Uncle Thomas Lauer, and Auntie Ali Gaffney, it's such an incredible honour.
Yes.
Vala, yeah. It's beautiful. It's an incredible honour, and I'm really humbled by it. Mm-hmm. But it was all about, I think, with Samantha, it was really about wanting to get this book out there, because it is, you know, part of one of a series of books. You know, you've got Growing Up Indian and Growing Up Aboriginal, Growing Up Greek.
Here's one for Torres Strait Islanders.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
And
yes.
It's groundbreaking. And
it is
so
groundbreaking. Yep.
To have been asked to, first of all, submit a story, there was no guarantee that your story would make it into the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also very honoured that that mine sort of made it in.
Yeah. And look, you're on page 7 here. The title here, Coconut Oil Chronicles.
Yes.
So which way? We love coconut oil, and it's a fantastic ingredient we use in more ways than one.
Yes.
So share your story with us in regard to this book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia.
Yep. So when Sam sort of first approached for us to, you know, to put a story in, there were no kind of like strict guidelines, or it was just, you know, just whatever sort of came to you, what it means to you to have grown up Torres Strait Islander in Australia.
Sure.
And I had to think for a long time, brother, because, you know, we got big stories, you
we
know,
do.
Our lives.
And
are
we storytellers.
Yeah, and, yep, and yep. Even though we're small in numbers, Torres Strait Islanders, but I think we're big on impact, you know, wherever we go and whatever we do.
Colourful and more ways than one.
Yeah, so how do you condense all that down into, you know, like a thousand to a few thousand words? So there were a couple of things.
Condense it down to a little jar of coconut oil.
Exactly.
How do you do that?
Yes,
thank you.
And what does that all mean? And how do you make a story out of that? So it a couple of themes that kept coming back to me when I was sort of thinking about, you know, when I was first drafting, was two things really: old people and coconut oil. And you know, the two just always sort of, you know, whenever
come
I was
hand
around
in hand.
Old people as a youngster growing up, it was come over here and get your hair done now. You know, I had to sit down and, you know, get my hair coconut oiled, and or when we had to go somewhere, it was like, wait, put that coconut oil on. You
must,
know,
must.
So it was always, yeah, the two always seemed to go
sure,
hand in hand
lovely.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hand in glove, when we talk to elders, you pick up coconut oil.
Yeah.
And here's your story.
Yeah.
Adding to the yarn for growing up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Okay. So tell us more about that story in regard to your input to this book.
Well, like I said, you know, it was a theme growing up, but the connections that I was able to make from that coconut oil, like, you know, who was telling me to put this coconut oil on? Where did it come from? You know, because we had to make our coconut oil in those days. You know, you couldn't just go into a store and buy it.
No, that's right. Exactly.
You know, so from...
Well, we used the produce that were around us.
Yes.
Yeah, the natural produce. And it became part of our cooking, a part of our clothing, part of our weapon and furniture or whatever the case may be. All
yes.
the above, eh?
Yeah. And you know, like, especially something like a coconut, there's so much we can get just from a single coconut, you know.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I mean, growing up, you know, Dad was always on the madu because not only for coconut oil, but that coconut was used for all the cooking, everything for
exactly.
making, you know, subby fish and rice and everything.
And I will say, just painting a picture, when a young girl sitting there getting her hair done with the coconut oil as the ingredient for smell, for perfume, for beautification, the yarns come with that.
Yes.
With the elders.
Correct.
There's the storytelling beginning.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I can remember just sitting and listening and, you know, them old aunties or old grandmas, they'd be sitting there behind you, you know, massaging that oil into your hair, and they'd be yarning up and you'd be sitting there listening.
But you can't make yarn. You go listen.
Exactly. Oh, no,
mouth.
You're just there to just
that's
shut
right.
up and just get
right.
your hair done. You're
well,
not
we get on.
Exactly, you know. And then you don't get up and move until they're finished with you.
But you carry those yarns. Subconscious mind, they sit. It becomes a part of you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it becomes part of the fabric of who you are, you know. And it wasn't until I sort of sat down to write this story that I had to think back to those times and those stories that I would hear. And it got me thinking even further, you know, because, like, one of the things I write about is remembering or having a memory of our very first madu. Mm. So a madu, for listeners who don't know, it's an implement for scraping coconut. And so our very first madu, the memory I had of it was that it was very old, it was very uncomfortable, And the metal piece on the end of the madu that was like had little teeth that you scrape the coconut meat on, it was a fairly orange rust colour.
Mm.
And so I had this memory of that, and I sort of think back on that now, and I think, well, where did that even come from? You know, where did the timber even come from? Because I'm pretty certain that that madu would have come from the islands when our family first came out here.
Yes.
Because the timber was so old, you know, and I wondered whether it even, where it might have come from, you know, was it once...
Fell off a ship.
Yeah, was it once...
Sat in the water for 15 years and came to the shores of Erab.
Exactly. Was it once the decking of a pearling lugger? Was it once, you know, the picket fence of the house where the London Missionary Societies stayed up there in the islands, you know?
Mm.
So these are the sorts of things that I was thinking about, because I know growing up, when we were small, you just didn't go and buy something new that you just could go and make,
no,
you know?
That's right, exactly.
Like Dad would go into the mangroves, he'd take us into the mangroves and cut wood and make furniture.
Sure.
Make little kids' furniture.
Yeah. Well, when you cut the wood, then you have to put the time into making what you're looking for.
Yes.
As you said, you can't go to shop and buy it.
Exactly.
Exactly. So that's living off the land.
That's it. Yeah.
And on the water.
So Coconut Oil Chronicles, it kind of goes into that. It sort of delves right into and digs up all the sort of the history and the memory that's associated with that. And in my story, I talk about, you know, nowadays, of course, I just buy my coconut oil online.
That's right.
Bless, from a Torres Strait Islander business.
Yes.
And but when I open it and I just, as soon as I get a whiff of that coconut oil smell, all the memories come back.
Yeah, beautiful. I got goosebumps here, my sister.
Yeah.
It's powerful, isn't it? And and this is your input as a storyteller for the book of Samantha Faulkner, Growing Up in Torres Strait. Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia is the name of the book. And got the beautiful colours of the Torres Strait Island colours there.
Yes,
The book is out now, so do check it out. Google it if you may. But also, like I said, there's other books, as you mentioned, Growing Up Disabled in Australia, Growing Up in Australia, Growing Up in Country Australia, Growing Up Queer in Australia, Growing Up African in Australia. Well, here's the Torres Strait Island version of growing up.
Yes.
And these stories are real because, like I said, we are storytellers.
Mm.
And it paints the picture, but it also educates the people of the world, especially non-Indigenous government, what have you, but also our own peoples and our young ones so they can pass the story. Because there's some young girl sitting there where Erab Island this morning getting ready for school, and her hair was being done with coconut oil.
Mm.
And that yarn was happening.
Mm.
It still happens today.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's what I want for our mob to sort of pick up and read these stories and instantly relate.
Yeah, relate
to them.
That's the word. Yeah, exactly. So with that, my dear, like I said, big shout out to Samantha Faulkner. The book is available, you mob, Growing Up Torres Strait Island in Australia. What's on the horizon for you as an established writer, published writer, author? You've got a book underway at the moment, have you?
Yes, the book is underway, and it's kind of inspired by my family who first, you know, when they first came out from the Torres Strait, and your family too, and lived in a shanty town just outside of Cairns.
Malay
town. So, so that's kind of like the inspiration, if you like. That's And then, of course, you know, as a novelist, as a fiction writer, you then draw upon that inspiration and then you mould it and you make magic with it, and then you turn out a whole new
story
with colourful characters and, you know,
So have we got a title for this book?
So the working title has been The Pearl of Shantytown.
Okay.
That's been the working title. But a new sort of title I've been playing around with is The Pearl of Tuggai Town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Well, fantastic. So have we got a date?
A publishing date?
Mm.
Well, like I said, it'll be sometime in the next 12 months.
Okay.
Yeah, and as my editing nears completion, how the process sort of works is then you get your publishing date booked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, publishing, that's a whole other beast. You know, you kind of got to go into a queue to get books published. And so you have to be fairly close to
sure.
the end when you get that date.
And what
booked.
Sort of cost are we talking about here, writing a book? We all got a story to tell. And that's for everybody out there should write a book.
Well, I think, look, it costs you in time.
Yes.
So that's the other thing. You've got to really be dedicated to it, to the craft. I mean, the book that I'm working on that's nearing completion now, I mean, I actually started drafting that book in 2019. Mm. Yeah. Some people take 5-10 years. Some people can turn out a book in 6 to 12 months.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
You know.
Depending on what time you got, what information you got, a team about it. Sometimes, well, we were talking about writing a book, an individual writing a book, that person would have a team of people around them, if not two or three.
Yeah, look, and it depends, again, what you're writing about, you know.
Okay.
Like if you're writing like a real-life book that you're sort of documenting.
Autobiography,
that sort of stuff. You might want to go and talk to people to find out more information about, you know, that time or that topic.
Yep. Yes.
I actually went and spoke to elders as well.
Yes.
With my book, because I'm wanting to include language words.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot, you know, our language is not written down prolifically.
Mm.
There's not a lot of stories in our language, although we have a lot of writers now, you know, people like Gillian Boyd Bowie, who has written a couple of children's novels,
yes,
and used a lot of language words in there. So, you know, and even though there's a Torres Strait Islander dictionary,
yes,
that was put out some years ago, but you still need to go and talk to language speakers to find out. Mm. You know,
pronunciation, spelling, whatever.
Correct.
All the above.
All of that, yeah.
And different meanings for different islands too.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And to make sure that when you use that word in your writing, you're using it properly and you're using it in the right context.
And permission.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Yes.
As black people, we do that. So my sister, look, big shout out to beautiful husband, Zach, and who you carry his name, Thacker. So your family name, maiden name.
So I was a Watkin.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Dad's father's name,
mm-hmm.
But Dad's mum was a Pitt.
Okay, there's their connection.
From Eru. Yeah.
Pitt
yeah.
blood here. Yep,
yes.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
And siblings, brothers
siblings,
and sisters?
Yeah, so Big Bulla Eddie, shout out to him. He carries Dad's name.
Yep.
And, yeah, he's been doing wonderful things in the National Indigenous Leadership space
yep.
for many, many years.
Yes.
And
we had Yarns on radar here, Cousin Ed.
Excellent, yeah, yeah. Still carrying on the good work. He and his lovely wife, Suzanne.
Yes. Suzanne, beautiful lady.
Very,
yes.
very supportive of him yeah. and yep. his work. And then, of course, younger sister, Felicia.
Felicia. Had lunch with her last week.
I should say Dr. Felicia.
Dr. Felicia, thank you.
Dr. Felicia
Watkin
Louis.
Had lunch with her JCU last week, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Married into
yeah.
the,
Watkin Louis.
The
yep.
Louis family.
Yes.
And with her two beautiful boys. And then younger brother, Doug.
Doug.
Douglas.
And what's
yeah.
Doug doing?
So Doug's still got his
media
film
work.
And TV.
Media work, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thank
yeah.
you.
And he's done amazing film.
Yes.
Documentaries with SBS, NITV, all that
so
sort of
thing.
So
there's the four.
Yeah, and then there's my lovely children.
Yes.
So I got my boys turning 40 this year.
Okay.
Yeah, that scares me when I say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's based in Brisbane.
And what's his name?
Love him to death, Brian.
And what's Brian doing?
So Brian works in IT.
IT,
yeah.
yes.
So
lovely.
He's sort of been carving a path in that direction.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know,
Layla.
Daughter Layla.
Yes.
You know, big.
Went to her wedding.
Big in
the
airport, arts.
Douglas, big in the arts.
Yes.
Always seeing her face on TV, different ads.
Yes.
Okay, hey, Cuzzy, there she is.
Paying the bills. Yes.
Paying the bills.
yeah. No, she's doing amazing stuff down there on Nam, you know, country down there.
Exactly.
And now I've got a grandbaby.
Okay.
I've joined your ranks.
Yeah, joined my ranks there.
I'm a nene now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Aka, and hand that baby back too.
Yeah.
Spoiled that baby and hand it back.
Well, you know, he's down in Melbourne, so it means I'm just constantly flying down to see him, or they're flying up to see us. So, Layla makes a huge effort to keep us all connected.
Beautiful.
And they're coming up.
She enjoying motherhood?
In a few months. Oh, yeah. And she's an excellent mum. Yeah. You know, she's a bit more mature than what I was when I had her.
Yep, gotcha.
So, you know, and just the access to information that young mums have got nowadays. Right, exactly. It's just incredible.
Beautiful yarn. Lenora Thacker, thank you very much, my sister. Good yarn.
Can I just say that Layla did a lot of the audio for the audio book as well.
Oh,
yes.
For this book here?
For this book.
Well, there you go.
So
big
that's
shout
even
out,
more
Layla.
Special. Well, okay. So she's actually recorded my story and a whole lot of others from this book as well. And I'll be catching up with her and a lot of the other Bullers and Sissies at the Brisbane Writers Festival that I've curated the Torres Strait program.
Okay.
And that's coming up in 3 weeks' time.
In 3 weeks, down in Brisbane.
Yeah. So anyone, any mob in Brisbane, come along to the First Nations programs. A lot of our sessions are being held at Coorildargan in the State Library.
State Library,
but
Coorildargan,
you can go online, the Brisbane Writers Festival online and book in, because our sessions are selling out fast.
Thank you. Yep. Beautiful yarn with you. Cousin Lenora, thank you very much, my sister. We'll yarn soon, and you keep smiling, and love to the family.
Mina bigesso.
Oh, jawohl. A beautiful yarn there with our sister there, Lenora Thacker, established writer. And we're talking about the book, thank you, Samantha Faulkner, edited by her, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. And one of the storytellers was Lenora Thacker, hence our little yarn there. So, look, great yarn. So the book is out now. Do chase it up, your mob. And this is your daily program, National Talk Black. And a big shout out to NERS, National News Radio Service. And we're here at Bama Bipa Media, BBM 98.7 FM. Big shout out to the manager here, as well as the directors and all the beautiful crew here. Too deadly. National Talk Black.